This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Hello. Pleasure to be here. Thank you all for coming. Fortunately, there's nothing beautiful or interesting to do outside here, so close to the beach, etc. So, Jan Wessel, I'm going to talk to you about haptics, so I'll explain to you a little bit what I mean by that. If you'd like to learn more about what I'm going to talk about today, check out our website. I've gone through a, not quite linear path, but I've laid it out here linearly during my career. I started in physics, moved through sound technology, art and architecture, later engineering, and now I work on haptics. And so for a while I was working in the arts on installations like this through an organization that I co-founded. This is a kind of interactive sound sculpture system for public spaces. People could record what was around them and perform it with these devices. Later, I worked on a large-scale installation for a museum in Germany. It's called Feno. This was with a group Foam, an arts group in Belgium that I worked with at the time. The idea was two large walls that you could press into, kind of like these pin boards that you make an impression on. Sensors in one wall would allow it to feel when you were pressing on it. It would retract, creating a relief that was reproduced in negative on another wall some 20 meters away, and people could press back on it against you. And actuators inside the device, we developed in coordination with a small robotics company in the UK. They were these sort of pneumatic actuators that had a kind of leak that gave them this really lovely organic quality. This was kind of my entry point into a field that I didn't know too much about at the time, haptics. So it turns out the word haptic means relating to the sense of touch, in particular, relating to the perception and manipulation of objects. Not a terribly old term. It came about in the late 19th century from a Greek term haptikos, meaning able to touch or grasp. And so I really think of haptics as the coordination of touch, perception, and action. And if you think about it as animals that don't just stand around in the world and talk or look at things, but actually do things that are necessary for their survival, haptics really provides the necessary conditions for us to interact within the world and for our own survival. Just to underline how important it is, I want to show this video. This is from the lab of Roland Johansson some decades back, but in it we see a person performing an ordinary act, lighting a match, the subject's fingers will be anesthetized with a local anesthetic, similar to what you'd experience at the dentist, applied to the thumb and forefinger, and so this will remove touch sensation from the fingers, and that will take just a moment with the assistance of the doctor. And so now the subject is going to try to perform the same acts. Picking up a matchstick becomes quite challenging, not quite successful. And on a further try, one can sort of grasp it, and will we get it lit? Closer. Yes, okay, finally. So, exactly. Well done. Really challenging to do. So I think we've all experienced similar conditions. If you've fallen asleep on an arm or something like that and lost sensation, often you'll find your ability to move your hand recovers faster than touch sensation does. Nonetheless, we tend to wait until we can feel things again before beginning to do things with our limb. So tightly are our action and perception intertwined through touch. Haptics is really this coordination of touch, perception, and action. And If you think about it, provides not only the necessary conditions for interacting with our physical world, but as we introduce more and more virtual worlds or digital content that we'd also like to be able to interact with, it's really, really an essential part of making these interactions possible. Otherwise, in some sense, we're in the same circumstances as this experimental subject we saw a moment ago. So in my lab, we work on virtual reality, new interaction techniques, and some related topics in robotics motivated by this basic problem. There we go. It turns out that we do not only experience the world through our hands, that we also interact with the world, importantly, through our feet. And you may have had similar experiences of lost touch sensation through your feet that caused you to temporarily suspend your activities of walking around. This was kind of my entrance point into research in the area of haptics with some colleagues at McGill University. We constructed an experiment motivated by the question of how we experience the world through our feet, through the sense of touch. So for this experiment, we found a disused corner of a basement in the university and erected this this apparatus that consisted of a bunch of materials, natural materials and man-made materials, on short walkways that participants would walk over blindfolded, and in different sensory conditions, they could either hear or not hear what they were walking over. They could either feel in an unimpaired condition what they were walking over, or have their touch sensation impaired by a kind of vibrating shoe sole that we engineered. What we found was that people are really good at this. They're really good at identifying what they were walking over and could even distinguish between sort of the size of gravel within a fairly fine gradation as they walked over it. This motivated an array of subsequent work that we did on both engineering new devices for stimulating the sense of touch in the foot, but also for scientifically investigating the sense of touch in the foot. I wanted to highlight one piece here in which my colleagues and I designed a floor component that provided touch feedback to the foot that was similar to what you'd feel in walking on kind of any natural ground material. And we showed that the effects that we investigated didn't particularly depend on the fine details of that feedback. But what we showed is that by providing touch-synchronized vibration feedback to the foot that was similar to what you would feel in walking in a natural environment, we could make this otherwise rigid plate feel soft. And with an amount of touch feedback that was so small that most of our subjects couldn't detect it, we could make it feel dramatically softer, roughly twice as soft. This motivated a bunch of subsequent work in the lab where I did my PhD, including the development of some haptic floor modules that provide touch feedback to the foot, allowing you to interact with touchscreen controls for the foot that provide haptic feedback, kind of interesting mapping applications, but also these sort of virtual floor interfaces that provide really palpable touch feedback as you walked over ice or sand or snow and things like that. So it turns out, though, that we interact with much of the world with our hands, and most of the recent research in my lab has been devoted to really trying to understand the remarkable haptic capabilities of the upper limb, with which we can perform myriad tasks, including writing, fine manipulation. We can even read with our sense of touch, which to me is really remarkable and almost magical feat. Of course, what facilitates this is our own skin. It's the largest sensory organ in our body. And within the area of kind of a single fingertip like this, we have thousands of sensory endings that collect mechanical information and thermal information and other sorts of sensory input and transmit it to the brain. At the heart of this process of capturing mechanical information from the world and transmitting it to the brain are mechanoreceptors that are analogous to the photoreceptors in your retina. There are a few key players within the palmar surface of your hand that's very sensitive. We have the Merkel cell. These are very tiny touch sensors that are sensitive to kind of sustained indentation of the skin. They allow you to feel how heavy something is, or things like this. The Meissner corpuscle, these are exquisitely sensitive to when our skin comes in contact with a touched object. And the Pacinian corpuscle, these are much bigger cellular complexes on the order of a couple millimeters in length. You have on the order of 1,000 of these in each of your hands. So if you dissected your own hand, you could readily identify these as kind of white, you know, millimeter to 2 millimeter long corpuscular elements, exquisitely sensitive to vibrations, flutter. So you can just gently blow on your own hand to feel the input from those. So collectively, these and other cutaneous touch receptors collect mechanical and also thermal and other sorts of information from the skin and transduce it into neural signals in the form of action potentials that are sent to the central nervous system. And for these light touch receptors, the corresponding neurons extend all the way into the lower brain before a first synapse occurs. So it's really a direct pathway from your skin to the brain that in many ways enables a lot of the feats of touch sensing that we're familiar with. The other important element in all this, though, is the mechanics of the skin. And one facet of mechanical interactions with the skin is that even very simple touch interactions can be exceedingly complex. So here I'm showing the finger pad. These are the fingerprints, the raised ridges on the pads of your fingers. And the little dots you see around here are sweat pores that help to maintain moisture in contact between your finger and a surface. The finger pad here is in contact with a glass plate, right? So we're able to image the finger, and as it begins to slide, we see, well, there's initially adhesion throughout the whole area. Then as the finger starts to move, we get this inward collapse until the whole area is sliding. So within this area, we have on the order of 1,000, a couple thousand sensory endings that are all translating each of these small movements into signals sent to the brain. So from this very elementary interaction, my finger sliding against a glass plate, we get a wealth of neural information. And so it's a real challenge to understand how touch perception, really familiar acts of touch perception, arise from given the mechanical complexities of these interactions and the abundant information available to the nervous system. A lot of the work in my own lab has been motivated by this basic question: what is felt by the skin during haptic exploration and interaction? So it's a question of both fundamental scientific interest, but also practical interest, because we'd like to engineer systems that can take advantage of it. So it turns out one important feature of the world is that it's not flat. And so we've been looking at aspects of this problem recently. In light of kind of the situation that I just outlined, So with a colleague of mine in France, Michael Wiertluski, and my former PhD student, Marco, we engineered kind of an interesting system that I wanted to tell you about. In it, we had the finger sliding across very simple haptic surfaces. Again, having in mind that very simple haptic interactions can be very complex, but also tell us a lot about how we experience the world through touch. So we had three flavors of surface, if you will: a bump, a kind of upward and downward step, and two different sizes. And we asked people to explore these at two different speeds. We measured the forces between their finger and the surface with really good temporal precision and high sensitivity, but also applied a high-speed camera, which viewed the finger in profile as backlit from this light source as all this occurred. And so the result of this was a shadow of the finger sliding over these bumps. We have finger shadow and surface. And this is slowed down by a large factor. I didn't write it down here, but anyway, the sliding interaction occurs much faster than this normally. And what we noticed from this data was a number of things, but I wanted to kind of highlight one aspect for you. And really, what stood out to us was the existence of these tactile blind spots. Now, because of the finite elasticity of the finger, even for these rather shallow surfaces, never comes in contact with all of the bump. In fact, it's not touching some of the regions of the bump that are most curved and most interesting to touch. This occurred for every surface that we investigated. It occurred at all speeds and for all sizes of surface. And I think it's really intriguing to think about as I go about touching other objects in my surroundings, realizing that my skin might be giving me the perceptual impression of continuity and shape and things like that, but in many cases it's not even contacting the surface that it is exploring. So a whole other thread of research in my lab has also been motivated by this basic question of capturing what it is that the hand feels. And in this work, we worked with some physician colleagues who were engaged in with the question of how doctors perform palpation. So palpation refers to diagnosing ailments of the body through touch. It's been around for a very long time, but the practice still today involves a physician touching the body, which might be the breast or the prostate or another portion of the body, perhaps an injured knee, and taking notes on what is felt, and perhaps following up later, feeling this part of the body again and taking further notes. So it stands really very much in contrast with a lot of the techniques we're able to bring to bear in other areas of medicine, where we get a lot of quantitative information. So we asked, well, what can we do to gather quantitative information from these interactions, and thought of designing kind of medical examination gloves that are mechanically transparent that would allow physicians to touch and feel things as they normally would, but would also capture stresses or strains, indentations of the skin that the physician felt for quantitative diagnosis, quantitative documentation and perhaps diagnosis. And we developed a technology for doing this, which looks like this. These are thin membranes with sets of orthogonal channels on two planes. We cast them out of a really thin elastomer and use these fine nylon filaments to create the channels, and through this casting procedure, and then in the final stages, fill the channels with a metal that's liquid at room temperature, similar to mercury, but non-toxic. And we seal these and then use electronic methods to capture stresses applied to the sensors using capacitance sensing techniques. So the result are sort of highly stretchable sensors that are suited to being worn on the body or perhaps on robotic devices. We've shown that using these devices, we can accurately capture the shape of an object that indents them. We can do that even when the supporting surface is curved. These devices have really good sensitivity, very good temporal response, and recently we've even shown that these sensors can be used to image simulated tumors in phantom tissues. So we think this set of technologies is extremely promising for both robotics applications, but also for applications in medicine. And this work has kind of led to a bunch of other research in my lab that I don't really have time to talk about in detail that has aimed to design new electronic devices that interface with or stimulate or collect information from the skin for a variety of different applications. Now, the account of touch sensing that I've given you so far is somewhat traditional in the sense that we think of touch sensing as occurring through a region of the skin that is in close contact with a touched object. That sort of makes sense. That's where the skin is being impressed upon. But it turns out that touch contact can excite non-local sensations in the skin. This has been demonstrated over many years, sort of. So for example, indenting the skin at a vibrating frequency can excite waves that propagate in the skin. It's been known that within the distance of a finger or so, these waves attenuate, but can persist as far as the wrist. And from research by some of our colleagues in Belgium, we know that even when the finger is anesthetized, that individuals can perform interesting touch-sensing feats using mechanical waves that propagate beyond the hand itself. Their first indication of this came from patients who'd undergone accidents of one kind or another in which the main nerve bundle innervating the fingers was severed. As these patients began to recover afterward, our colleagues in Belgium were able to do perceptual testing with them, in which they tracked their ability to perform really fine sensory discrimination, so distinguishing surfaces according to texture. What they found was that they were able to recover their ability to discriminate surfaces by texture before electrical connectivity to the brain was restored. And the reason is that mechanical signals were propagating from the finger to regions of the arm where there was still electrical connectivity. So you don't have to take my word for this. I have an experiment for you. So you take the sort of wrist area, anywhere in your wrist area, place that firmly against your ear, and then you want to oppose your finger like so and gently stroke the fingertips just like this. And you should hear a kind of zipping sound if you do that correctly. Okay, and so that zipping sound arises from the ridges, the fingerprints on each finger interacting with each other. Turns out your finger ridges are relatively rigid, but that's a different story. And so this really fine tactile information from the interaction of your fingerprints is readily transmitted up as far as your wrist, right? So what's happening here? Well, to investigate this in more detail, I mean, the story is sort of the one I gave a moment ago, that these touch-related signals travel efficiently in the skin. In my lab, we've been investigating this in closer detail by using new methods for capturing these touch-related waves in the skin and reconstructing what's happening. This is our latest sensor device. It's a set of high-bandwidth MEMS accelerometers. They capture vibrations over a wide frequency range at large number of locations on the skin. We use some published information about how these signals decay as they travel within the skin in order to combine input from these individual sensors into a holistic view. And then what we do is, well, what we'll do in the example, well, we'll do something else in the examples I'll show in a moment, but if we do something like stimulate the finger with an actuator like this, with a sort of vibrating stimulus, then we'll see a response throughout all these channels. Even more interesting, we've asked people to touch objects and surfaces as they normally would, using different parts of the hand, or grasp objects, or perhaps touch objects with other parts of their hand. From each of these interactions, we get a large number of recordings of the motion of the skin at different locations, and we combine these in order to develop an integrated view of what's happening in the hand. So on the left, you're seeing the interaction that produced these signals. On the right is a reconstruction from our measurements of the activity in the skin, slowed down by a factor of 30. And what you can see from this is that even a light contact at the end of your fingertip excites waves that rapidly travel throughout the hand. In fact, in all of these colored areas, the signals are readily perceived by the nervous system. As you've just explored yourself, the magnitude of these signals is easily large enough to be detected. And for example, even when the index finger taps a surface, you can see that areas throughout the rest of the hand, including adjacent fingers, receive significant information. So this sort of has pointed to a new view of touch sensing in the hand. If we look at the kind of time-averaged information that's delivered to the hand across all sorts of different interactions, you'll see that we can really richly associate different hand interactions, objects, and materials with different patterns of vibration that are transmitted throughout the hand. So as engineers, our thought is, well, this might provide us with a new way of designing touch feedback for the hand, although no devices for doing this exist as of today. There's also a lot of interesting frequency information in here. So if you look in kind of different frequency bands related to the sense of touch, one gets a similarly rich picture. Here, these are actually three different interactions that all involve both the index finger and thumb. One is gripping a larger object, another is gripping a smaller object, and another is sort of tapping with an object. And each elicits its own characteristic spatial pattern of vibrations in the hand with different energy in different frequency bands. We've shown recently that we can use this information to really accurately classify what it is that someone has touched or which part of the hand has been touching an object. We can even distinguish different grasp types. We can do that with really high accuracy without much effort in engineering the classifier. In other words, this sort of touch information is really already richly encoded in these interactions with the hand. So in our ongoing work, we're applying these new sensing methods, including this, our latest sensor device, in order to capture a wider array of everyday interactions to sort of fill out our understanding of how it is that we experience the world through touch and what the hand actually feels when we touch objects in the world. And I want to thank all the members of my own lab, a bunch of collaborators and funding sources, and thank you for joining me here today.
And do you see any application for prosthetics in the future involving haptics?
Yeah, I think that's another great example to point to. So it turns out the field of, I was going to allude to something else. I think what a lot of us have in mind are prosthetic devices for the upper limb. It turns out prosthetic devices for the lower limb are quite a bit more common, but many of the same issues apply, namely that while the ability of these devices to be controlled and move has advanced, we're in the very early days of being able to provide touch feedback from these devices. And this has limited not only their functionality for their users, because in order to know if your prosthetic hand, say, has grasped an object, it's necessary to look at it, something we don't have to do with our ordinary hands, but our biological hands, rather. But in addition, it has sort of led to a disconnect in body ownership for people who are wearing prosthesis. So you could imagine if in your own hand you had a very useful version of a hammer that was sort of, you know, moderately heavy. That was useful for quite a few things. You had an array of buttons. You might want to hold it now and again to perform certain tasks. You probably wouldn't want to carry it with you all the time because it doesn't feel in your hand all the time because it doesn't feel like part of your hand. And so it's really that missing element of embodiment that I think is also going to be really important. But it's an area of really active research at the moment.
All right, thank you. Yeah.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.